Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the Weekly Worldview, the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on all that. All right. Move right on ahead. Should I start with Christine Blasey Ford? Can anybody take any more of that? I can't take any more of it, so I'm certainly not going to start there. Did you watch the testimony live? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. You didn't watch it live? You never watched any of it?
No.
How could you have not watched any of it? It was riveting. All right, so I could go there. I could start with E. coli or how about my travels? So I was traveled back east this week. I managed to get to New Hampshire and Maine, two states that I had never been to. Yeah, two more into the bucket list there, done. And then I was reassessing the states that I have not yet been to, and I believe there are only four left. Rhode Island, Delaware, Vermont, and Hawaii.
You've been to Alaska.
I've been to Alaska just by happenstance. The military flew me through Alaska. It was dark, that's all I remember. Mm-hmm. It was dark, I was sleepy. They buckled me into a C-130. Anyway, so there you go, for whatever that's worth. Anyway, the drive from Vermont to Maine is something I recommend if you like deciduous trees and you like the foliage and all of that. Go see that. It was certainly delightful. Let's see, is there any other way I can avoid talking about Brett Kavanaugh and Catherine Blasey Ford? What's with the Blasey Ford with the hyphenated last name? Does anyone gotten to the bottom of that one? Did her first husband die? No? Maybe she doesn't like him very much? What's the deal? What's the deal with keeping your maiden name and then a dash and then your husband's name? What's up with that? That bothers me. So that right there, I don't like her already. And then she's a professor at some university nobody ever heard of, Palo Alto University? What is that? Was that in the, like, is that in the cafeteria at Facebook? Palo Alto University? I never heard of that. And she's a lifelong leftist liberal. And, well, I'll tell you what, I'm just going to say one thing about Catherine Blasey Ford, and then I'm going to leave it aside, because I don't want to hear any more about it. And we've got another week of it to just sit and trudge through the history. Anyway, let me just say that, for what it's worth, I think that the drinking and being groped at a high school party that allegedly occurred with Ms. Blasey Ford, let me just say that I think the drinking part had a much larger effect on the balance of her life than did the groping part. And then we'll just leave it at that. That's all I'm going to say. Did anybody give her a blood alcohol test before she got up there? Did anybody see what was actually in that drink that Cory Booker gave her? Because my guess is she needed a couple of pops just to get that thing off the ground. That's just, all right, I'm going to leave it. I'm not going to say anymore. Let's go to artificial intelligence. Let's talk about artificial intelligence before I get myself in trouble and I end up with Michael Avenatti filing a lawsuit against me because I hate women. Let's see. Let's talk about artificial intelligence. This is from the Science File. Researchers, governing officials, people in the education establishment, are concerned about the ethics surrounding artificial intelligence, as well they should be. The people designing artificial intelligence systems and algorithms have at their fingertips the technology that, well, it could be used for good or evil. It could hurt people. It could help people. And there is some concern. As a matter of fact, According to France 24, the French Press Association, German business software giant SAP has published an ethics code to govern its research into artificial intelligence. Yes. The group includes engineers, theologians, politicians, scientists, and bioethicists. And they've put together a list of seven commandments. The seven artificial intelligence commandments. And they, well, here, one of them is to avoid the risk of causing discrimination or of unjustly impacting underrepresented groups. Can we try that again? Yes. Avoid the risk of causing discrimination or of unjustly impacting underrepresented groups. That's one of the seven commandments. They're certainly not as concise as the living God with his Ten Commandments. They're a little bit wordy when it comes to their commandments. Avoid unjustly impacting underrepresented groups. Let's see. They say they're following in the footsteps of Google and Microsoft with their seven commandments. Okay. Well, we can see how that turned out. What with Microsoft funding the basically the choking off of the progeny of half the underdeveloped world, and Google building a search engine in China that mostly searches for dissidents and targets them for punishment by the communist Chinese godless atheist government. And so now SAP is following in the footsteps of Google and Microsoft, at least according to the French press agency, who they don't know any better. They don't know right from wrong at the French press agency. Well, and that's going to be the problem with the people writing the artificial intelligence algorithms, is they don't know right from wrong. And we really need people who really understand right and wrong. But we don't have any. Germany's federal government this month, as a matter of fact, well, this month being September, today's the last day of the month. Germany's federal government in September convened a data ethics commission. That's great. So we'll have ethics guidelines written for AI programmers by godless heathens and perverts and homosexuals and drug addicts and adulterers and fornicators who don't know right from wrong at all. And then the technology will be unleashed upon the world. It's a little bit scary. It's a little bit scary. Let's talk about killer robots, as a matter of fact. Yes, I said killer robots. That's right. Let's see. A lecturer at Oklahoma University last month gave a speech in which he warned that the technology for human-assisted killer robots is already here. The technology already exists. The killer robots may be among us. Yes. Let's see, the parts needed to assemble killer robots, they say, will prove not difficult to buy. That's right. Go down to Radio Shack, build yourself a killer robot, program it with some artificial intelligence. The Daily Star over in the UK, which is, I'm sure it's a broadsheet rag. They say it's, these killer robots could be impossible to trace. Criminal gangs and terrorists could get their hands on murderous artificial intelligence to hunt down and kill their enemies. And, yeah, well, it's definitely within the realm of possibility, I suppose. Major countries, including the United States and Russia, have apparently, allegedly, according to the Daily Star, the U.S. and Russia oppose a treaty banning killer robots. Well, or what they call autonomous fighting vehicles. Autonomous fighting vehicles. That's robots to replace soldiers in combat, which I generally support. I mean, if we had to have a war with Russia or China, I would much rather send my robots than my children and grandchildren. That's all. So I support the development of autonomous fighting vehicles. I think that's a good thing. But the bad guys could get a hold of these things, which is true. And it's a little bit scary. Oh, autonomous weapons systems is what they call them. Fighting machines is what I call them. I have to write a novel. That's what I'll call them. But the United States and other developed militaries call them autonomous weapons system, and they are being developed. Now, we have a quote here from Noel Sharkey. He's a spokesman for a group called the Campaign to Stop Killer Robots. That's the name of his group. The Campaign to Stop Killer Robots. We don't want them. We're going to stop them. No killer robots! He says that he's calling for a new international law to prohibit development of autonomous weapon systems. Well, I'm against that. I'm against banning or prohibiting autonomous weapon systems because, well, I mean, I could give you several case studies to prove, or at least to provide evidence, that autonomous weapon systems, killer robots, artificial intelligence, certainly no more dangerous than humans, and what we've been doing with humans over the last, century or so, as far as developing the algorithms in the humans that lead to all sorts of dangerous and destructive behavior. My guess is that the robots will not be as dangerous as the humans. And since we've managed to make it this far with humans among us, I think we could probably survive the robots as well. But it is a little bit scary. But like I say, not as scary as humans. Listen to this. We go to the justice file, where I have an article from the Mississippi Sun-Herald, the Jackson Sun-Herald, Brookhaven, Mississippi. Two police officers were killed on Saturday. Corporal Zach Moak and Patrolman James White were killed after responding to a report of shots fired. A 25-year-old young man, Marquise Aaron Flowers, is the man police say shot the officers and killed them. And he was wounded in the shootout and was taken to a Jackson, Mississippi hospital where he is being treated for his wounds. Brookhaven, Mississippi. Okay, so I've been to Brookhaven, Mississippi just by chance. I happen to have a client in Brookhaven. I visited there. It's a relatively small town. If I'm not mistaken, it's about 45 minutes from Jackson, and it's out in the sticks. And Marquise Aaron Flowers shot two police officers on Saturday, killing them in Little Brookhaven, Mississippi. He was on probation for an auto burglary. He had recently fled from police at a traffic stop. Officials in Brookhaven say it's not clear why Flowers, who abandoned a car he was driving and stole a pickup truck and eluded police. It's not clear, they say, why he was not sent back to prison. And why was he on the loose and a threat to the general public that resulted in the deaths of Corporal Zach Moak and Patrolman James White in Little Brookhaven, Mississippi. How is that he didn't go back to prison? Well, nobody's quite sure. And the intelligence surrounding this incident was not even artificial. These were actual governing officials, lawyers and judges and legislators and the governor and the mayor and everyone else involved. They were all humans. And now we have two dead police officers in an otherwise quiet and peaceful southern town. And we've got a maniac, Marquise Aaron Flowers, who will no doubt, I have no doubt that Marquise Aaron Flowers will likely outlive me in prison, or he might not even stay in prison. He might get out at some point in the not too distant future, even after being convicted of murdering two police officers. I tell you, it's the human algorithm And what's happened to that? That scares me a lot more than any artificial intelligence. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's good to have everybody with us out there as we plumb the depths of the human algorithm gone awry here in the early 21st century. And we welcome you to join us as we analyze the situation in light of reality for everyone to see. And that brings us, this most recent criticism that I've just dispatched upon the governing officials brings us naturally to reason number 1149 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Reason number 1149, your child may be required to take a morality test. I said a morality test. That's M-O-R-A-L-I-T-Y. Look it up. Yes, an English teacher in Ohio is on administrative leave. Well, was put on administrative leave after she subjected her students to what parents are calling a sick and disturbing online morality test. She assigned it to her students there at Bradley High School, somewhere in Ohio, Hillard City, Ohio. And, the test... Well, first of all, the teacher worked at the school and other schools in the area for more than a decade, and school officials are refusing to identify her for fear that I don't know why. There's no explanation. Probably because they don't want to be accused of rape. She probably claimed one of them tried to rape her in high school, and then who knows, that they'd be under investigation for months and months. Anyway, the test that she gave the students that parents call sick and disturbing rated the morality of 36 different situations covering topics from incest to killing innocent animals. Some of the students thought the test seemed weird and disturbing, so they told their parents. Otherwise, the parents would have never found out. Let's say that this was a test that involved liquor and marijuana. Do you think the students would have found it? Think they would have told their parents? Probably not. But since it involved incest and killing animals, some students were creeped out by it. They told their parents, I really don't want to talk about, I don't want to quote what these are. I'll post a link to it. But the incest thing is really creepy. And this is something that you can download online. And more than likely, it's just that the teacher was a lazy slacker And she downloaded something online to take up the student 20 minutes or whatever, just so she could browse her Facebook feed or whatever. And it turns out it ended up to be sick and disgusting. And the teacher didn't notice because teachers have a hard time identifying sick and disgusting anymore because that's most of the curriculum. Anyway, district officials were forced to issue a prepared statement. Why? Because none of them wanted to actually stand up in front of live people, parents, and answer questions. So instead, they issued a prepared statement and they were let off at that. That's it. They said in their prepared statement, "We share the outrage of our parents and community." Our parents. I like that little possessive pronoun there. Our parents, says the school. Uh-huh. "We share the outrage of our parents and community. We have put this teacher on administrative leave. This was an isolated incident. An activity of this nature would never be considered acceptable." That was the first prepared statement that the school released. 4 days after being put on administrative leave, the teacher resigned voluntarily, triggering another prepared statement to be released by the school. The school released a statement saying, quote, "The circumstances that led to the resignation of this teacher are disappointing, as she has recognized. While the district-approved curriculum and education materials encourage students to think critically, several items on this quiz were simply inappropriate and inconsistent with established classroom resources. The district works hard to earn the respect and support of students, parents, and the community at large, and we regret any mistrust this may have caused. Please keep moving along. Don't stop and pay too much attention." They regret any mistrust this may have caused. And that's it. Teacher resigned. Who knows? Probably working at another school district close by. Or perhaps has gone to seminary to become a Catholic priest. Who knows? Oh, no, it was a girl. I believe this is. No. The nuns would never take this thing. I certainly don't want to paint with a broad enough brush to include the nuns with the priests, for crying out loud. All right, so there's reason number 1149 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. And as if you needed another reason, I have two more. But before we get to those, let's delve quickly into the science really file. We're going to talk about peer-reviewed research. According to the Associated Press, 3 prominent U.S. scientists have been pushed to resign over the past 10 days after damning revelations. Look at that, a biblical phrase, 2 biblical phrases, damning and revelations right there. I like it. They've been forced to resign after damning revelations about their methods and concerns that this is a sign of increasing tolerance for misconduct within the research community. Oh, no, I'm sorry. They say that the suspension is a sign of decreasing tolerance for misconduct. It's I who think that the fact that these 3 have been bounced is a sign of increasing tolerance for misconduct within the research community. Let's go through by the numbers, ladies and gentlemen. Jose Baselga. He's the chief medical officer at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, a relatively prestigious institution, I must say. He authored hundreds of articles on cancer research, but it turns out he failed to disclose in a number of articles that he had received millions of dollars from pharmaceutical and medical companies. Whoops, forgot about that, the millions of dollars. You know, when I was putting together the references at the end, I was so busy trying to track down all the references that I forgot about the millions of dollars. I left that out. He resigned on September 13th in shame. Meanwhile, Brian Wanzink, director of the Food and Brand Lab at Cornell University, writing research articles, including one on pizza and the appetites of children. He wrote a research paper on pizza and the appetites of children. Okay, well, did he find that pizza, that children like pizza? They don't say. Anyway, other researchers discovered anomalies and surprisingly positive results in dozens of his articles. Wanzik encouraged one of his researchers, one of his fellow researchers, to extract from her data results more likely to go viral. So instead of focusing on homing in on the truth, he told one of his researchers, it looks like a student or possibly a fellow, to extract from the data the results more likely to go viral. Well, after a year-long inquiry, Cornell announced that Wanzink had committed academic misconduct in his research and scholarship. That sounds pretty serious. He is set to resign at the end of the academic year. So he'll continue, even though it's embarrassing, they say, academic misconduct, and we're going to keep him on until the end of the school year. And by the way, it's September. The school year just started. So anyway, I found that a little bit odd. But after that, he'll no longer teach at Cornell because we have standards. 13 of his articles have been withdrawn by various journals. I wonder if it was the pizza and the children's appetites. That's probably it. He probably wrote a research paper indicating that children didn't really care for pizza, and that's when people began to be suspicious. So obviously, he was a shill for big gluten-free. Saying that. So, listen to this. So I'm at this training up in New Hampshire, and anyway, I'm training these, medical professionals on how to use a topical product. It's a topical product that you rub on the skin is what it is. And the nurse practitioner asked me with a pained look, she said, is this product gluten-free? And I kind of gave her a cockeyed look, and I said, gluten-free? And she said, I know, but I have to ask, because people are going to ask me. And I said, not only are they gluten-free, but you could tell people that, you know, even if we rub gluten all over your body all morning long, and even if you had the worst, most acute form of celiac ever, it wouldn't make you sick, because we're rubbing it on the skin. Anyway, she had this, she was like, I know, but they're going to ask. I have to ask. She was embarrassed to ask, but she had to ask. All right. Anyway, that poor lady, I know. What are you going to do? People are terrified of gluten. That's now, how did I get onto the gluten? Oh, yeah, we were talking pizza. Oh, yes, the researchers being summarily dismissed. Well, not summarily. Some of them are being kept on until the end of the school year, which just started. But finally, the third researcher is one Gilbert Welch, a professor of public health at Dartmouth, a relatively prestigious institution. He was forced to resign last week, accused of good old-fashioned plagiarism. That's just old-fashioned plagiarism, that's all. This was in an article published in the New England Journal of Medicine. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that. It's, the New England Journal of Medicine. Ivan Oransky, co-founder of a website called Retraction Watch, a project of the Center for Scientific Integrity. Ivan and his group keep tabs on retractions of research articles. Because here's the thing. People write peer-reviewed articles. And what a lot of people don't know is that when the peers review them, they trash them. And they take their research apart piece by piece, and the scientists are embarrassed. And the article is eventually proven to be complete foolishness. Now, it doesn't happen often, but it happens. But people tend to read a clinical article and they treat it like it's right out of the Bible. It's as if Moses brought it down from the mountain. But it's really not that way. And Mr. Oransky and his group's Retraction Watch, so he told AFP that what has emerged so far is only the tip of the iceberg. He says, at the end of the day, we need to think about science as a human enterprise. We need to remember that it's done by humans. And humans make mistakes, they cut corners, and sometimes even worse. He reminds us that academic careers are largely built on how much one publishes and in which journals. As a result, researchers compete to produce positive, new, and clear results, but sometimes, well, that human algorithm fails, and they end up lying, cheating, and plagiarizing. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. It's good to have you and all of that. So we go on from the... we've just left the science... Really? File. And from there we go into the science file. Just the regular science file. Where Forbes reports that raising kids with religion may protect their mental health. Yes, listen to this. A new study from Harvard. Now, hopefully it wasn't written by one of these three. Let me see here. No, this is from the School of Public Health at Harvard, which remains unindicted as far as this most recent report on academic malfeasance. The T.H. Chan School of Public Health finds that kids and teens who are raised with religion and religious practices tend to have better mental health as they grow up and age. Yeah. Anyway, you could read it that simply if you wanted to keep it simple, but the authors at Forbes can't do that. Why? Because they're a bunch of atheists, heathens, homosexuals, fornicators, adulterers, liars, and thieves. Unrepentant types. And so they have to inject kids and teens raised with religious or spiritual practices tend to have better mental health. But not to worry if you're not a regular service attender. No. Not to worry. Don't worry. We don't mean to insult anyone. Yeah, they lump in prayer with meditation. This was published in the American Journal of Epidemiology. Study finds the people who prayed or meditated on their own time also reaped similar benefits. So if you don't go to church and you don't believe in God, that's okay. If you pray or meditate to just anybody, you probably do better than those who don't. But what this basically says is that if you raise your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, that they'll do better in life, is really the bottom line of the research. Anyway, they give all the percent, 18% more likely to be happier, whatever that means, 30% more likely to do volunteer work, 33% less likely to use drugs in their 20s. These are children who are raised in the fear and admonition of the Lord, which is good. They have more life satisfaction. They're better able to process emotions. We're more forgiving. And we're less likely to have a sexually transmitted disease, if you can imagine that. I think people who meditate are more likely to have a sexually transmitted disease. People who meditate and go to yoga class are like five times more likely to. All right, I'm just kidding to my friends who meditate. God bless you all, please. In the meantime, the research hints that we might want to take time to meditate or pray, whatever that might look like to you, says the authors at Forbes. Pile of heathens. Even if you're not religious in the classic sense, which means even if you believe in some fake bogus God, or even if you just worship yourself as God and that's what you meditate about, you being God. Not the classic sense. The classic sense being that you believe in the true and living God, the creator of the universe, and his son Jesus Christ. That's the classic sense. But even if you, according to Forbes, even if you're not religious in the classic sense, just observing something bigger than you, perhaps nature or the night sky, might tap into the same mechanism. It's a mechanism is what it is what they think. It's like an electrochemical release from looking at a waterfall is the same as having knowledge of the living God and the history of all of humanity all the way back to the beginning. I'm sorry, it's not the same, Forbes. You can't look at a boulder and a waterfall and understand why everything is the way it is and where we came from and have the world make sense. You can't. I don't care how long you meditate on it. You look at the jungle foliage and somehow you suddenly understand the mysteries of life in the universe. But if you read the Bible and you know God, you can understand all that. You can know where we came from and the world will make sense. You'll understand why it is that, you'll just understand why it is, okay? I don't want to put too fine a point on it. Anyway, Forbes closes by saying, like many other studies, the new study also suggests that some of the fundamental habits that humans have been doing for eons, like praying, might actually have a lot more value than we tend to think. The moronic, idiotic authors at Forbes, because they've been looking at people who pray and they chuckle. What is that? Guess what, you moronic contributors there at Forbes? Most of us take prayer fairly seriously, and we already knew about all this. But we're glad you got clued in, you hapless idiots. Thank you very much for pointing out the obvious. Now, meanwhile, speaking of pointing out the obvious, divorce court in California, did you read this? From the domestic tranquility file, more and more people keep getting divorced in California, right? We don't even need a study to point that out. And now the divorce courts in California have initiated new rules, a new law, as a matter of fact, granting judges authority to settle disagreements over who keeps the family pet the same way they handle child custody disputes. Why was this rule necessary? It's because so many of the people getting divorced in California no longer have any children. And they fight about the pets as if they're children. And so the judge is like, oy vey, what am I going to do? Please, I need to be able to. These people are at each other's throat. I have to give visitation to the ex-wife. And in the past, the pets were treated as property. Right? Isn't it amazing how society evolves? Now fewer and fewer people in California are having any kids, and they treat their their pets no longer like property, but like children. When, I don't know, 150 years ago, people treated children as if they were property. Anyway, it's just kind of bizarre. I don't know where I'm going with that. One judge reported that she's seen her fair share of divorce cases where couples battled relentlessly over the pet. Relentless battles over the pet. Well, because they don't have kids anymore. What are you going to do? Now, if you do have kids, probably don't live in California. But maybe you do. Maybe you're bucking the trend out there. And if you do, you should keep them out of the government schools. We have reason number 1,150, and this is in California. Governor Jerry Brown has signed into law a bill by Assemblywoman Shirley out of San Diego. And Shirley wanted to make sure that sex ed was extended to all charter schools. Now, are you familiar with charter schools and that whole scam? Charter schools are basically groups of educators and parents who secede from the existing school district and form their own charter school and bamboozle all the other parents into thinking it's a better deal. And for the past few years, as charters were granted, they were allowed to ignore certain requirements of the curricula of the existing school district from which the parents and the educators had seceded. Well, Shirley from San Diego, she didn't like that at all because the children were not being sufficiently sexualized. And so she and fellow molester Jerry Brown signed a law saying that sex ed has to be taught in all the charter schools. Ah. And under the new bill, 2601, let's see, to quote from the bill itself, here is how the bill reads. Quote, like charter schools now have a set foundation for sexual health education. Each school still has flexibility when it comes to deciding what curriculum to adopt, what grades will undergo the instruction, and other curricular elements. Yeah. This new law is a win for local advocates who want sex ed in all Central Valley classrooms. Thank you. I think that was a recording of the actual reading from the... Let's see. I have a quote here from Sarah Hutchinson, who is the policy director at Act for Women and Girls. That's her organization is called Act for Women and Girls. And she says, quote, we're thrilled. We're so happy that all these students, regardless of the school they attend, will receive adequate and comprehensive reproductive health education. This will enable them to make the best decisions for their life and their future. Get out of my face. All right. She does. She sounds like a Marine Corps gunnery sergeant. Didn't get enough sleep last night. That's Sarah Hutchinson, which I have more from her, but I'm not sure we can take it. So we'll move on. The name of the new law, listen to this. The name of the new law that allows adults who are not related to children to talk to the children about sex, that's what it really is. It's adults talking to children who are not their own about sex. And quite often it's young adults. And even more often than that, it's young single adults talking to 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th graders about sex. That's what it really is. And it's called the California Healthy Youth Act, which is right out of a George Orwell novel. It's quite Orwellian. It requires students to receive science-based sex education. Science-based sexual health education. And they're going to get it once in middle school and once in high school. And we will cover essential topics such as healthy relationships, preventing unintended pregnancy, and sexually transmitted infections. Oh, yes, not to mention gender and sexual orientation. just in case you were wondering about it and would like to talk about it. Maybe you'd like to come to my office after hours and we could talk about gender and sexual orientation. So that's what so they're going to teach the kids science-based sexual health. Science-based? Excuse me, but science is amoral. Science doesn't teach children that sex is a sacred institution ordained by God between one man and one woman for life. Science doesn't teach that. But then again, that's the last thing these perverts in the California public school system want the kids to hear. The Visalia Times, which is where I got this story, the Visalia Times says that since the California Healthy Youth Act took effect, the percentage of sexually active California students who use birth control has increased. Oh, imagine that. And we have a quote from Jeanette at Black Women for Wellness. Black Women, I said, for wellness. She's the executive director over at Black Women for Wellness. And Jeanette says, we're excited to finally address the high rates of sexually transmitted infection and unintended pregnancy. We're so excited, says Jeanette over at Black Women for Wellness. Well, you know, Jeanette, you and all of you perverts in the California public school system, charter schools, and everything else, you know who's excited? Hell is excited. Hell is excited to greet you at your coming, Jeanette. Welcome back, and we move forward and on and more from the public schools here. Got reason number 1,151 to keep or get your children out of the government schools, and it's about sex ed again. Listen to this. According to a CNN article, in elementary school, children get to talk about unwanted touching. Well, they get more than a talk about it in some schools, but let's just leave that aside. And later on, and then they learn about boundaries and what constitutes assault. They say 24 states and the District of Columbia mandate sex education in public schools. I was actually surprised by that. I would have thought that it was all 50 states. And I would have thought that it started in preschool. But then again, when you read the news, and you tend to think things are worse than they are because it's like an avalanche. And you forget that all these stories are just a few stories out of hundreds and hundreds of billions of stories occurring every day. And so maybe it's not quite as bad as I thought. But 24 states and the District of Columbia mandate sex education. But only 8 states require the mention of consent. Teaching kids when it is and when it isn't consent. Trying to train the little children to understand the line between consensual sex and sexual assault. So CNN presents this as if it's a problem. Well, only, well, 24 states teach sex ed, but only 8 states teach kids when it is they're raping someone and when they're not. What is consent? How is a boy supposed to know when a girl consents? Well, here's the thing. If you're teaching children about sex the right and healthy way, and you have to bring up the concept of consent, you've already gone wrong. You've already made a mistake. Because sex is something that a husband and his wife should desire. And consent is not even a part of the picture. Nobody thinks about consent. You got to keep their hands off each other, for crying out loud. You got to separate them with a crowbar before the wedding. Forget about consent. So anyway, it's just, I've got a quote from Catherine Brown. She's the vice president of educational policy at an institute. What institute is it? I'm sorry, my notes aren't very good on this. She's at the institute. Well, we'll just call it the institute. And she's the vice president there, and she's important. And she told CNN, states are not providing students with enough guidance and support in terms of how to behave in the world they grew up in. It's really important to be clear with them about what is and what isn't permissible and where the lines are when dealing with other people in fornication and adulterous relationships. Oh, no, she left out the fornication and adulterous. That was me. Because if there's no fornication and there's no adultery, then consent is really... All right, I'm just that's it. Reason number 1,151 to keep your children out of the government schools, because Catherine from the Institute might be talking to them about sex, for crying out loud. And who needs that? It's dangerous. All right, now let's go. Now this is an interesting story here, ladies and gentlemen, from the Justice File. And let's see, and this really isn't... Let's see, do I have enough time to do, right, we'll do these, okay. So Fox News reported this, the end of last week, that a man burst into a Connecticut church and confessed to worshipers and the pastor that he had killed a jogger 4 years ago in a cold case that police had been investigating. That's right, William Leverett told the congregation and the pastor that he stabbed a mother. Mother of two, Melissa Millen, in 2014 to death. He said he stabbed her to death. So when the pastor and the other people in the church heard it, they decided not to forgive him unconditionally and love him. They actually brought him to the Simsbury police to turn himself in. Being somewhat judgmental, I think. I thought we're not supposed to judge. Well, when the guy just told you he stabbed a woman... You tend to be judgmental. Gee, should we forgive him or should we take him to the police station? They're probably like, grab him. Anyway, the Leverett told cops that he went to the running trail the night of November 20th, 2014. Listen to this. This is how sick our society has become. He went to the running trail that night looking for what he called human contact. After attending a treatment meeting for sex offenders. So this guy was a registered sex offender. He had been charged with sexually assaulting a child in Colorado in 2009. And he was allowed to live. And because he was allowed to live, he murdered this woman in 2014. And it wasn't the justice system that caused this guy to go to a church and walk in and confess. The only thing that did that was the living God and this guy's conscience. Because the justice system did everything they could to make this guy into an unrepentant murderer. And they actually succeeded. They made him an unrepentant murderer for almost 4 years until the conscience that God put in this guy finally got to him. And where did he go to confess? He didn't go to the police station. He didn't go to a mental health facility. He didn't go to a hospital. He didn't go to CNN. He didn't send a letter to Dianne Feinstein. He went to a church. And there's a reason he went to a church. And it's because his conscience got to him. That's all. Anyone who molests a child, anyone who touches a child in any way that's sexual or abusive, upon conviction should be put to death, swiftly and painfully. There are certain things I thought we all agreed that we would not have to tolerate. I thought we all agreed. And now we've got a woman dead, a mother of two murdered by this maniac. All right, I can't take anymore. I gotta go. All right, for those of you who've been bamboozled by the Republican Party, real quick here. I know I don't want to make any more enemies because I know the Republicans are the salvation of us all. And it's those darn Democrats. They're bad. They're bad, those Democrats. Senate Appropriations Chairman Richard Shelby announced in August that House Resolution 6157 marries the two largest fiscal year 2019 appropriations bills, defense and labor HHS education. Those are the two big spending bills. And they were married together by the appropriations chairman. Well, the original House version of the HHS spending included child killing reforms. Reforms in how we murder innocent children were in there. Denying taxpayer funds to Planned Parenthood. Eliminating Title X family planning grants, which are used to kill babies. And prohibiting research on aborted fetal tissue. Those were all in the original House version while the congressmen were busy bamboozling their conservative Christian voters. Well, at the end of the day, after all the debate had been done, none of the reforms survived the House-Senate negotiations. And none of them were made a priority by Donald Trump, by Richard Shelby, by any of the Republicans in the House or the Senate or the White House or anywhere. And Donald Trump just signed it. He just signed it all into law. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul had filed an amendment that would strip taxpayer funds from Planned Parenthood. One small, tiny little novelty to give to the conservatives. We'll strip funding from Planned Parenthood. Well, that didn't make it either. That got kicked out. And we got a quote from Utah Senator Mike Lee. He says, quote, "For the second straight year of unified Republican governance, pro-life governance, the annual spending bills will include no new reforms protecting unborn children or preventing taxpayer funding of the abortion business," says Utah Senator Mike Lee. And I appreciate Utah Senator Mike Lee saying that, but what I don't appreciate is that all of the conservative senators and congressmen voted for it anyways. And at some point, if you want to get something done in a representative democracy, at some point you have to say no. And the Republicans for as long as I can remember, going all the way back to my entire adult life, they've always been saying, well, we can't do it now, but if you'll vote for us, we're going to get to that. That's an important thing. And just we need to elect more Republicans. And then we elect a Republican majority and then it doesn't get done. And they say, well, what we need is the Congress and the Senate and the White House. And then when we give them that and it doesn't get done. And then Donald Trump wins, and it's supposed to shake up the whole political establishment, and it shakes up everything except the murder of innocent children, which continues unabated. And all of your senators and congressmen signed on to it, except seven. This thing passed, this monstrosity, passed 93-7. I didn't look up who didn't vote for it. I hope Mike Lee didn't vote for it, and I hope Rand Paul didn't vote for it. At least they would maintain some credibility. Rand Paul, let me just address this because I like Rand Paul. He introduced his amendment stripping taxpayer funds from Planned Parenthood. Just like he does every year, he introduces bills to either strip Planned Parenthood of funding or to acknowledge the personhood of the unborn child. And every year, the Republicans defeat it. And then every 2 years, Rand Paul runs for re-election in that institution. And I have to ask you, Mr. Paul, at what point would an honest broker just resign from that institution? and decide to fight for what's right and good in some other way. And just leave the whorehouse and say, okay, that's not going to work. I'm going to try something else. At what point, Mr. Paul and Mr. Lee, at what point would you not just resign? And I guess I won't have an answer to that. And that's all well and good, because I don't have any confidence in any of those people anyways. And I've lost all hope of any kind of democratic reform or reform within the republic. I'm just going to focus on my own family. Because America, if this represents America, this most recent spending bill, and I hope it doesn't. Because, well, let's keep in mind that the way the 435 liars and prostitutes and perverts and murderers in Washington spend our taxpayer money, that's only, and then the president and the vice president who sign off on it, that's 437, is it? Something like that. That's only 437 stories out of 100 billion stories a day that are going on at any given time. And so while they do represent America in a political sense, they don't really represent anything about me or my life on a daily basis. And hopefully they don't represent you either. As I said in the past, I don't think you're qualified to decide who rules over me. And I don't think you're qualified to write the laws that will govern in my life. Now, I don't think I'm qualified either, just so you know. I think there's a higher authority to whom we must all answer. And I think there just has to be a better way to do governance than this. There just has to be. And, well, together we'll continue to go forward and we'll investigate various ways to do it. I'm open to suggestions. Have a few ideas of my own that we can talk about later, but that's it. I'm out of time. I can hear the music. That's it. Another week. As we go forward into another week, I ask you to join me in holding your head high and remembering that it really is all about the living God and our relationship with Him. That's what really matters. Let's try to be representatives for Him and for His ideas. And the rest of them, well, hopefully they'll come along. That's it. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. And at AmericanRightToLife.com. And of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.